Can you tell me how you came to go to Greenham Common?
Right. Well, I started off when the cruise missiles were going to be, we talked about, and we thought they were coming in. I was living in the Orkney Islands then, and there was a local CND group, and I used to go to that. And then I moved back down south. I actually come from Surrey, and I joined the CND group there. And then my sister, who actually lived in Nottingham at the time, had got involved in the women's peace movement, and she was the first one in the family to go to Greenham. She went on the coach from Nottingham, and then I thought, oh, this sounds good. So I went along for one of the big events, you know, in Brace the Base, and I just thought, oh yeah, this is it. Because I think what it is, I was very angry, and I think that's what resonated. So rather than, CND was too tame, it was too organised, it wasn't sort of passionate enough. So what I found was going to Greenham and making lots of noise and dressing up and decorating the fence and things was much more what I wanted. So yeah, I just joined in from there. Yeah.
How old were you when you went?
27, I think, or 28, yeah.
And your sister?
She's a bit younger. She must have been 21, 22. She, I think she was still a student then. She had been a student, yeah, in Nottingham. She stayed on here, yeah.
And was that in your circle or your family or whatever? Was this what everybody was doing, or was it seen as unusual?
No, it was usual, because my grandfather had joined the Labour for Peace movement after the First World War, and we were sort of brought up as pacifists, really. My mum used to go to CND and she went on marches. She did actually come to Greenham. She felt a bit nervous there, a bit awkward, but she came along once or twice and joined in. So, yeah.
Did your mum find it a bit too muddy and noisy, or what was
it? I think so. I think she didn't like the noise and the sort of, everyone making such a fuss. I think she found that a bit much, but
And did you actually then move down and stay?
Yeah, I remember going, the first time I went to stay was in February, and it was freezing cold, and I just took an ordinary tent and a lilo and got very cold. But I liked it. I thought, oh no, I want to be here. So I went back to stay for a longer time then, but I learned, you know, that you need loads of bedding and, lots of stuff underneath you, and not just an ILO. So
did it feel like it was the right place to be at that time?
Definitely, yeah, because I think it just seemed so important, you know, and looking back and hearing from when I heard the story about the Russian guy who was on duty, and he saw what looked like on his screen looked like a missile attack coming from the US. It was only because he suddenly realised that it may not be a missile attack. He didn't press a button, you know, so I think it was, like, really important at the time, yeah.
Can you remember what that felt like, of that feeling of being very close to the edge of things?
I can't remember everything. I can remember seeing the cruise missile come out. I was on night duty. I mean, on night watch, and I'd had rather a lot of whiskey, and all of a sudden, there was only two of us still up, and they were just started doing an exercise with the unarmed cruise missiles, and it came out of Blue Gate, and I was, oh my God, you know, and that was very, very frightening. It took me years to get over that, because it was so big and so sort of evil-looking, you know. And that, I think, just everyone's everyone having problems with this and problems with that, and kind of... But I think what I liked was that we could say what we wanted. You know, I remember being in London with some friends and meeting the Russian ambassador, and this friend just told him straight, well, you're just as bad as the Americans, you know. And we kind of, it was that kind of power just to be straightforward and direct. I think that's what I liked and what was good about it, yeah.
So, a kind of freedom to speak truth to power that didn't exist anywhere else in society?
No, you always had to go through the proper channels, you know. Even in CND, there'd be marches and demonstrations, but it wasn't the same. I couldn't just sit and write a letter to my MP or Margaret Thatcher or whatever as a member of CND, you know. That's not wasn't quite the way you did it. So, well, not a passionate letter, yeah.
And did you always stay at Bluegate when you were there?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
What do you think the different characters of the Gates were?
Oh. We were a bit irresponsible, and I wasn't actually a punk myself, but it was quite a punky sort of gate, yeah. And we weren't terribly brave, you know. We were a bit sort of, we never didn't get arrested as much as Yellow Gate or Orange Gate. But Orange Gate were the ones that were quite dynamic and clever, you know. Yellow Gate were very noisy, and Green Gate were very right on, and we were, like I say, not. We were a bit irresponsible, really,
And how did you get to choose the U-Gate? How did that happen?
Well, it just happened because I went with other people from our CND group on Night Watch, and someone in the group had been there before. She said, oh, this is a good one to go to. So we started going there,
I think, from what I've heard, quite a lot of the women thought the same thing about all the other gates. We're all thinking the same about them. When you went on the first big action you went on, which was Embrace the Base, What do you remember about that day?
I don't remember a lot, to be quite honest. I've looked at photos since, and I think that's sort of blurred my memory. I remember it being muddy, and I remember being impressed seeing people shaking the fence. I think we had some stuff to put on the fence. I think my mum had given me something to put on the fence. And the singing, but that's what I really liked as well, the singing, yeah. So
it was a big part of everything, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think it was, looking back, it seemed to come a very large number of women from all over the country turned up for that event, and that seemed to almost come from nowhere.
Yeah, even the most, you know, my mum, I can't remember if my mum came on that, but her friend did. Her friend was a teacher and she came along, you know. And I think there was a man or two on the bus as well. I can remember having arguments. This man was very determined he should be coming too. But
do you remember that being a big bone of contention in CND circles, or was it just accepted?
I think certain people are very keen. They sort of felt left out. Yeah. I think it was accepted in the end, but
Was it an important part for you that it was women only?
I can remember now. That's right. I did go on Embrace the Base, and there were some old friends there, and they said, oh, we're not allowed to be here, and they said, we go in there. But they didn't take it badly in a way. They just sort of thought, oh, well, that's what women are like, and they weren't unpleasant about it, so it was okay. And I think up to a point it was good, and I really liked being with other women, but there came a point, it was the lesbian thing and the vegan thing, and when there was like a certain amount of pressure beyond that, you know, that sometimes got a bit much. But on the whole, yeah, I really liked it being women only, yeah.
Did you feel that was a lifestyle thing as much as a political thing?
There was some people there who were very keen on like being vegans and being lesbians, and this is the way everyone should be, you know. So, I mean, we were all quite young, so, but on the other hand, there were other people who didn't let it bother them. They just carried on their own way, you know, so it wasn't too bad,
I can remember some women attached to a certain political party probably shouting at us, so Margaret Thatcher's your sister then, is she? as if because this was a women-only protest, and that meant that.
Yeah.
Do you think it would have worked the same way if it had been, do you think it would have happened if it had been a mixed thing?
Probably not then. Now, I was talking to someone, funny enough, yesterday. I'm involved with the anti-fracking. And he said there was one guy that goes to the Missing Springs backing site is quite, he swears quite a lot and it's quite aggressive towards the police, and this guy is talking to him, didn't like it. And I think, and he understood what I said. Yeah, I said that's why they got rid of the men at Greenham, because they were being quite aggressive. And he kind of understood that. And I think men have done more thinking since then, and that things are, I mean, the miners' strike was very violent, you know, and I didn't like that particularly, but he was still on their side. But it's, I think since then men have kind of learned that you don't have to be violent to get things done, yeah.
Do you think that the atmosphere with similar things happening at the same time, so there was the print strike, the miners' strike, Greenham, there was a lot of people face to face with the police at that time, weren't there?
Yeah.
Do you think that was all part of the atmosphere, or do you think that it was very specifically nuclear that the women turned up for, anti-nuclear?
Well, when I went to live in London after being at Greenham for a while, and I think we just got involved in everything, and we did, you know, when we were sitting around the campfire, we'd chat about anything political, you know. So I think, yeah, I remember going on anti-apartheid marches particularly. Certain things, and the miners' strike, I supported the miners' strike, so certain things I did alongside Greenham, yeah. So, but part of it was just the Tories being in power, and yeah.
I was thinking about the fact that there were two things that we have now that we didn't have then. One is mobile telephones.
Yeah.
And another one is lightweight waterproof fabrics.
Well, we did have Gore-Tex sleeping bags. They were the sort of prize thing if anyone brought a donation of Gore-Tex sleeping bags. I remember one particular woman, Lizzie Spring, I don't know if you knew her, but she'd been straight for the Gore-Tex sleeping bag. And, I kind of don't remember it so much. But definitely, we always had loads of soggy bedding, I remember that. And I remember mobile phones, it was... Yeah, because that's that incident I was telling about when the cruise missile came out. Because our plan was to run down to the phone box and get the message out, you know, but then the police were coming up, so I didn't get that far. They sort of grabbed me. But I think, yeah, it was much more complicated. You know, we had to sort out all our phone trees and people's phones were getting tapped, and so we had to deal with that. And, yeah, you couldn't. But I think we use our instincts more. Sometimes I think you can kill your instincts if you're always relying on technology and kind of know where to go or where to be.
I think it's hard to remember that we didn't think, it's hard to organise a telephone tree, because that's all we knew, so we just did it. We weren't sitting there thinking, I wish we'd invented mobile telephones. So it's looking back, you think, how did we do it? But that's hindsight, isn't it?
Yeah, because even now people don't put stuff like, you can't really put demonstrations and stuff out on the, or actions out on the internet or anything, because everyone knows about them, you know, so you do have to still be a bit secret, but, yeah.
How do you reckon is the best way of being stealthy now? You don't have to tell me if it's...
I don't know, I just suppose you just use pay-as-you-go phones.
So how long did you end up staying in the end?
It's about 3 months. I was there from sort of March, April through the summer. I mean, I left towards the end of the summer, about September. Yeah, and then I came and went. I went to stay in the Greenham office in London for a while. And then I came and went. That's when they started zapping at the Yellow Gate.
Can you explain what zapping is?
Yeah, they were using, I'm not sure if it's microwaves or radioactive waves, but they used a device at the front gate, the main gate, it's like to confuse people in crowds. They sent out radio waves. I know the friend I was staying with, she came back from Greenham one weekend and she was yellow, you know, and they had really bad effects, like on... physically on your liver and things like that, so they weren't, it wasn't good.
And was it happening everywhere, or was it just at the main gate?
At the main gate. I think because normally they use them for demonstrations, so they were using it when there were sort of big crowds of people there. Yeah. So, but I remember I was still there when they introduced it, and we were going, oh no, this can't be possible, you know. People kept talking about it, and in the end we worked out it was. You know, it wasn't good at all. But I think they were using them elsewhere as well.
Did you do any actions where there was a choice of, like, do you want to actually go in, or do you want to cut the fence, or do you want to be a legal observer, or where there was a choice of, like, how far into trouble you wanted to get, basically?
I never went very far into trouble. My sister actually died the year before, and I wasn't feeling like 100%, so I didn't sort of go over the top. So I only got arrested once in the base, but we were never very organised at Blue Gate, you see, this was a thing. So you sort of said one thing and did another, but we did all go in one night, and we got quite a long way in, yeah. And then we got arrested and taken to the base, and I think we just got let go then. We didn't get charged with anything, but...
Was that the sister who'd taken you to Greenham?
No, that's my older sister, yeah. Yeah, she died in 83, yeah.
That was quite a big thing to be dealing with at the same time.
Yeah, it was. I was quite quiet a lot of the time and sort of a bit withdrawn, you know. I wasn't full on, but, yeah.
Was it useful at that, because you were dealing with that, to have a place to be where you weren't having to do the other things of life, if you like?
Yeah, I think so, yeah, much freer to come and go. And of course, we were all signing on, and no one in the job centres bothered, you know. We just went in with our rucksack, oh, I'm here today. And no one said anything, it was like,
Do you think they all knew where you were?
Yeah. Yeah, they're a lot less fussy then, yeah.
It wouldn't happen now, would it?
Oh gosh, no. Now you get sanctioned straight away.
Funding political action.
I was staying with my parents at that time, but it was quite difficult, yeah. But, and then I went to live in London. And I can't remember when it all finished, but I did move to Wales, and then I moved to Wales, so I'm not sure. It got a bit funny though, towards when I was in London, the American women came to stay and things got a bit odd, I remember that.
Was that?
But I'd stopped going then, yeah.
Who were the American women?
People for help, wages for housework, help. Yeah. Yeah, I stopped going then.
I've heard that from some other women as well, and it seems like there's something about, whether they were CIA funded or not, there's something not right about it in terms of the way that Greenham had developed, and which seemed to be about what I call a self-organising system. It kind of, whatever it did it on its own terms, and there was a lot of room for manoeuvre for each woman to find her own place there.
Mm.
Do you think that was a true description of what Greenham was like?
Yeah, because I know my sister's partner, she met her, well, not through Greenham, but through the Women's Peace Movement. She's American. I remember another woman who there, an American. They're both quite wild sort of women, you know, had a lot of problems in their past, so they weren't particularly well behaved or anything, but yeah, they were very much their own people and not coming in with any ideas of organising or anything. Yeah, I think it was the fact that they were so organised, and they tried to organise everyone else. Yeah. So.
Do you think Greenham was not organised, or do you think it was a kind of a different way of organising?
Yeah, I think it was a different way. Some people were very organised, like say Orange Gate. They always managed to do really good actions, you know. But I think some people were organised and some people weren't, because we had Pat at our gate, who was an older woman. And she was very busy, and she liked to do this, and she liked to do that, and get everything right. And, you know, we treated her a bit like our mum, you know. But I think, it was more, there was sort of room to do things differently, really, yeah. So, because they didn't have phones, nothing was written, you couldn't write anything down, you know, there wasn't an office, there wasn't anything like that, you know.
So the that thing about who are the leaders doesn't really work, does it, if there isn't an office and a...
Yeah, because I remember being there when that people decided, because the leaders were getting picked on, that it wasn't a good idea to have leaders. So it was more from that side, but it did get a bit annoying, because when I was in the Greenham office in London, someone from Norway phoned up and wanted a Greenham woman to go and speak there, and two of us said, oh, I'll do that. You know, we were just sort of discussing which of us was going to do it, and they said, oh, no, we only want Helen Johns, you know. And so, yeah, that was a bit of a difficulty sometimes, yeah. So, but, I mean, some people like Rebecca and Helen Johns and people, I mean, they were good as public speaking and out there, but I think we all wanted to be recognised and, yeah.
Do you think, so does the actions going on, and some gates were more organised than others at doing them, but how much do you think it mattered just to have to be there as a presence, to live there?
I think that's what really mattered, because at one point there was only two of us there, and that was a bit all scary, you know, but just because one thing's happened, you know, they would go on exercises and they would open the side gates and take the cruise missiles out or whatever, And two, we used to do a lot of talking to the soldiers and a lot of, you know, in the MOD, and so for them we need to show presence. And even though the Americans never looked at us and weren't allowed to talk to us, they could still see we were there, you know, and I think that's what was important, yeah.
What do you think the importance was of talking to the soldiers and the MOD police?
We just show them that we're normal, you know. I mean, there was a problem because a lot of the time it was the paras there and they'd take me psycho, you know. Well, one of the women's brothers was in the paras and she... I mean, they were quite difficult to talk to, some of them, but others are okay. And MOD we could talk to, but I remember now the rumour was that they had their own black magic sort of coven and they were up to... dastardly things, you know. So, I don't know how much good talking to them did, but yeah, I think some of them. We did have one guy who had been in the RAF and he'd decided to leave, and he came around one day on the outside of the fence and sat and chatted to us. Yeah. So it did work sometimes, yeah. And I think there probably were people who didn't actually agree with it who were in the station there, yeah, yeah.
And for the rest of the world, how important do you think it was that there was that presence and that commitment, and you know, cold and rain and month in, month out?
We did get in the papers a lot. I remember, yeah, the journalists come in and they always got things wrong and that and the other. But we got a lot of publicity, and I think... And I heard from what the senators said afterwards, the reason why they decided to withdraw the cruise missiles was the trouble, that it was too much trouble. You know, the fact that we were causing real trouble is what actually caused the missiles to go. So I think the more that was broadcast, the better, yeah.
And who was that who said that to you?
It was reported in the papers. It's one of these freedom of information things. So many years after the cruise missiles had been withdrawn, came out that the senators actually agreed to it, decided to withdraw it because it was too much trouble keeping them there. Yeah. So.
Do you remember having a sense of what was happening on the other side of the Berlin Wall or throughout Europe generally? Do you remember it feeling like an international connection into an international movement?
I can remember one thing. I remember. Someone said, this is a bit after actually, that some Persian women had got hold of a boat or something. That was the time of the Iran war. Yeah, and they sailed into the Gulf of whatever in the Middle East, you know. So I know there was quite a lot of other stuff going on in different countries. Yeah, it was. And like my sister went over to the States and there was Seneca there. There was peace camps there, yeah. So I don't remember all of it, but I know it was going on, yeah.
Do you think there'd ever been, I suppose it's a daft question, but I'd never thought about, have there ever been peace camps before? Where did the idea even come from?
Yeah, I don't know, to be quite honest. Because there's always been marches before, haven't there? And
whereas now it seems to be part of the political landscape is to not just turn up for a day and make noise, but to get put your tent up or your bender up and show that you're going to stay.
Yeah, I mean, it's really good, but I don't know, I suppose it's people who came from Wales, but I don't know whose idea it was. But yeah, it has carried on, definitely. Yeah.
What would you say a typical day was like at Greenham for you?
An awful lot sitting around. You'd get the fire lit, or someone had lit the fire, and you'd have your coffee or whatever, and then you'd eat whatever happened to be there. It was varied a lot. You know, sometimes you had loads of food, other times you didn't. The worst bit was when we got evicted. I didn't enjoy being evicted, so you always had to be on the watch out for the bailiffs and get your tents sorted out and things, and yeah. But if you were getting evicted, then, like I say, we did a lot of sitting around chatting. We used to play games. I remember one woman, Ginny, she always pretended we had a baby in the camp, and we'd make up this little scenario about having the baby in the pram and not to disturb the baby. It was silly. And then I like to make up stories. I got everyone making up stories. And and so we did a lot of that, and just chatting about politics. And then people come and visit, and we talk to them. We quite often had Quakers coming to visit, and people like that come along. One time we even had a Welsh male voice choir. They'd been doing a performance somewhere. On the way back, they stopped to sing to us. So all sorts of things happened.
That must have been magical.
Yeah, it was lovely, yeah, yeah. But then on the other side of that, we had the woman who lives opposite. I can't remember her name now. She didn't like us at all. So she'd be annoying. People came, yeah, they used to walk past with their dogs, the local people who didn't like us very much. So that'd be a little bit more interest. Then you might wander around to another gate to chat to people, find out what's going on. And then you'd have to get water. We had a van. Someone donated us a van. So we used that to get water. We might go down the shop or, so
what happened on an eviction day?
You just had to all get, someone gave us this lovely thing. It was a trailer. He made it, I don't know what it was on, but you could pull it. It was on like four wheels, and it was like shelves. It was like a larder, and it's like shelves, and we kept all our food there. So you just had to pull it out of the way. And then we had the van, so you could load stuff in the van, but you just had to sort of bundle everything up and move it off the site. And then once they'd gone, we just put it back again, basically.
But how far off the site did you have to go to meet the conditions?
I can't remember now, to be quite honest.
Just into the road, or?
Yeah, I know we had that. There's some land we could use near Greengate. We used to take stuff there sometimes, but that was quite a way. Yeah, it was just off the site, really. Like I say, we had the van, so we tried to get it in the van. Yeah. No, I can't remember. Yeah.
What were the bailiffs like?
Oh, there was... not very nice. There was one big guy, I remember him, and that this was bad. I remember someone practising witchcraft on him. And she ended up in hospital, and she thought it was because of her, but I'm not going to say. But he wasn't very nice, no. There was only two or three of them. There weren't many. But they're very rough, yeah. And they would take stuff, yeah.
It seems to me like you were saying when there were men on political demonstrations, it could often be quite violent.
Mm.
But Greenham seemed to substitute mischief and humour and for that being a nuisance in various quite funny and mischievous ways was more effective than hitting people.
Yeah, I mean, I think best one, there was a woman there, she's a Dutch woman, she wasn't there for long, but She was really good at super gluing the gates, so she'd suddenly sort of dash up, put super glue in the lock, because it's only a side gate, so there were people on patrol there all the time, and then, just leave it and see what happened when they turned up to try and get out the gate. That was fun, yeah, the things like that. Yeah, and just joking at the bailiffs, and, yeah. We were mostly good humoured, but from time to time someone lose their temper, but, yeah.
What do you think, in terms of the legacy of Greenham is politically? Do you think it has a political legacy?
I think it's given women more freedom to speak out and be heard. It's a bit odd, because I've joined the Labour Party recently, and they do have a women's forum, but I don't go to it because I don't see the point. And it's like, kind of, you know, with the women I know, I think we got the freedom just to be ourselves and not try and conform. I think that's the main thing, not like conforming to any sort of stereotypes or sort of old ways of doing things. And it's acceptable, you know, for women to be scruffy and rude and all sorts of things that it wasn't particularly before, you know. Yeah. Because I think that was the other thing, that we were always so dirty and smelly, and it was like, you couldn't, we were sort of trendy in a way, we had our own personal fashions, but you couldn't keep clean, you know. It's like, yeah. So.
Where did you wash, if you wanted to wash? In the winter.
There was a woman who let people have baths in her house, but we didn't go there very often. I used to go home sort of after a week or so to my parents, but I can't remember. I think we had people clean their teeth, I remember that. And we could have a bowl of water or whatever, but I can't remember it very much about actual washing, to be quite honest.
Is there anything that you would say your most abiding memory of being there is?
I think it's just the women. I mean, I know people now, there's someone who I haven't seen her for ages, but it's meeting all sorts of really interesting women and all different, and kind of, I still remember, I wasn't there, but I remember Christmas. I was there, but I wasn't saying that the vegans buried their turkey, you know, and it was sort of things like that. But sort of quite outspoken. There was a lot of kind of outspokenness, a lot of honesty, and a lot of women just wanting to live differently and do things differently.
So a lot of different. A political education in a lot of different directions.
Yeah. We all came from different places, you know. It was like, because Bluegate was quite working class, really, but I wasn't particularly working class. But so you kind of learned a lot. Yeah, learned a lot about other women. Yeah, and their backgrounds, and we got quite strong on things like saying no to male violence, and, you know, we got quite sort of an education about what went on in the world, and we decided we were going to do something about it, domestic violence, those sort of things, yeah.
I remember meeting a lot of women who had been to prison, and it wasn't just because of Greenham actions.
Yeah.
There seemed to be, and I was about 20 or something, and I was trying to figure out what this was about, and it was, and slowly realising that this was about things like the reason why women were mostly in prison was poverty and domestic violence and all those things, and that was a broader kind of a context to things than just nuclear disarmament, for example.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Can you remember something that you learnt there that you didn't know before?
Oh gosh, probably loads of stuff. time ago now. I know what. Oh, that was a learning experience. One woman whose father, his family had been in the Holocaust, and he'd ended up committing suicide, and that was quite an eye opener. Yeah, Jewish woman. Yeah, things like that about what really goes on in the world. Yeah. So.
When you decided, when it was your time to leave, was that a kind of a overnight thing, or did you just drift away?
I was very tired, to be quite honest. I kind of got worn out physically. So I just started going up to London to stay, you know, because I wanted to get away, yeah. So gradually over a couple of months I came and went, yeah.
And was that to go and still be an activist but just not at the camp?
Yeah.
And did you go on, is that what you did next for the next few years, or?
I ended up sort of homeless because I was squatting in London, so I went to Wales, and I don't know, I kind of did, but yeah, I suppose I stayed an activist, but I'd done different things at the same time, yeah.
Do you think that squatting culture mm-hmm. in London was important for Greenham?
I think it was, because there was virtually nowhere to stay, you know, one or two people managed to get flats, but not many. And I think it got you out and about and meeting, you know, I didn't just squat with Greenham women, I squatted with another woman as well, and, yeah. Funnily enough, that's in Jeremy Corbyn's constituency, so he got quite involved in London politics as well, and Ken Livingstone, all that, the GLC. And so we got involved with other groups as well, yeah, and other people. So, yeah.
What do you think about how women organise now? Do you think women organise together much, or do you think that doesn't happen?
It does happen. Like my sister, she's a very strong lesbian, and her and her friends do a lot together. I tend not to, although I do have very close women friends, and we do things with men, but we're kind of there going, right, we know how to do this, and it's sort of we're not domineering, but we're quite confident, and so I will organise alongside men, but I will make sure that I feel it's getting done right,
Do you think that's part of the political legacy then, is that there's a whole generation of women who have the experience of a big political action, probably when they were quite young, and have gone on to do other things?
Yeah, I think it makes you more. It was very difficult as well, because one, you got quite depressed because it was quite horrible what we had to deal with, and it also, you know, shook up your social sort of life and you know how you lived and everything, so you had to sort of adapt to living differently, but at the same time you're aware that you could live differently, and there was a lot more. I mean, I think I was a lot more aware of the sort of the natural world, and we did a lot of kind of, I don't know, pagany, witchcrafty things, and that was more, yeah, became more part of my life. And I think, yeah, I was aware that the world was a bigger place than I'd known before, yeah.
Do you think there's a direct link between what happened at Greenham and the anti-fracking movement, for example?
I don't really know that much about the anti-fracking movement, because I didn't get involved here at the beginning, because I'm always a bit cautious about getting involved in things. But I mean, here it's a mixed group, and it's, I think, yeah, people are aware that they could take direct action and they could do it non-violently, and, yeah. And I went up to the camp at Mitten Springs yesterday. I felt quite at home. Those two women, they got a little bit of land there with caravans on, and two women just doing moaning away about the washing up and this, that and the other, you know. Just felt like home, really. So, yeah, you can organise yourselves and get things done, and, yeah. Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell me about what you think Greenham was about, or what it meant to you?
I think I'd, what kind of spiritual experience? I think it's that It was a combination of the political and the spiritual that I think it took you to a deeper level, and you kind of understood a bit more about how life works. And
I'd love to hear some more about that. It sounds funny, like you just said how, you know, it was hard and it was tough and cold and muddy and all those things. How do you think the spiritual, how did that come about for you?
It's more like I say, the singing and the being there and the doing the actions that people had thought out in order to have a good effect. They were quite traditional. There were people there from Australia and the States who kind of knew stuff that we didn't use here in England as well. You know, we did an Aboriginal meet one time that worked really well when we were having difficulties between the gates. I didn't actually go because I was away, but they set up camp in a separate place to the gates and lit a fire, and everyone just stayed there till they'd sort their differences out, and that really worked really well, you know. So it's things like that and the kind of symbolism of the actions. Kind of sacredness of life, I suppose, is what I mean, you know, and the songs we sung and the, and you can't kill the spirit, which we got so bored with.
She's like a mountain. But that, I've just caught a train from Hull, and so you go along the coast, not the coast, the Humber Estuary, and you're just looking at the mud and the water and everything. It's incredibly beautiful and just right, basically. Do you think that was about being out in nature so much as well that had that connection for you?
Yeah, I think so, because there were woods there and, sort of space, It was really good. Yeah, I still like being outside,
Did you have a spiritual background before you went there?
No, my family weren't religious. They'd given up on religion. And I was a bit of a hippie, but I didn't go into spiritual stuff very much, no.
Is that what your poems are about?
I'm more political, I don't know. I'm going to get them in a minute, but I did later on write some more spiritual ones, I got involved in the women's spirituality group and things, So I think after Greenham I got involved in more kind of things on that level,
Do you think they're two different things, politics and spirituality, or do you think they're...
Not if it's done properly, like say with the Aborigines and the First Nation and American people, that's very much part of the way they organise themselves, so it's sort of should be part of everything, you know, but it's not necessarily in this country. Well, we have church and state, don't we, but it does make it difficult. Like I say, I've joined the Labour Party only recently. It is quite difficult to get involved in mainstream politics in this country if you have a sort of different idea of how it should be.
Does it just not feel like it is talking about something different?
Yeah, it's too much about organisation and not quite enough about how we get on together and how we deal with what's the right morals, I suppose, and ethics and those sort of things,
Do you think that thing about, how are we getting on with each other is what Greenham had to do a lot of, because women were living together, not just going to a meeting and going home again?
Yeah, I mean, it had its ups and downs. And people whispered behind each other's backs, but it wasn't nasty in any way, you know. People get annoyed with one another, but there's also a lot of talking went on and a lot of, we need to sort this out properly. And because we had time to chat, so, yeah. I think it also the pressure of it made it quite difficult, because I remember someone saying, "Oh, you never make friends here." But it was quite a difficult environment. I mean, we did all make the effort to get on, but you couldn't really go out and relax together in the sense that, you know, go for a night out or whatever. So it was quite difficult in a sense, just to be friends and stay friends. Yeah, I made one or two friends, but
have they stayed friends?
I've lost touch. I'm very bad at when things get bad. I go, oh dear, I'll leave them for a bit. But
my sister has just found some of the Australian women through just remembering one name and mm-hmm. getting on Facebook and seeing if she could find somebody, and so she's tracked some of them down. So
remember Katrina? She was a doctor. Those two of them are doctors. Then another woman. Oh, I can't remember. Yeah, because I had a really good friend, Mandy, you know, who actually moved to Nottingham, but her and her partner had a really quite an angry breakup, so I kind of lost touch with her then. But we did make close friends, yeah, in that sense. But yeah,
what would you say the legacy of Greenham is in your life?
I suddenly start singing. When things get tough or get difficult, I go, right, I'm going to sing a song. I'm going to get back to who I am and not get, like, drawn into unnecessary arguments or, you know, it's like I go, I'm bigger than all this in a way, you know, because we're sort of together in this, and it's like kind of sense that, no, life's okay and life's natural, and that we need to keep to the naturalness of life, I suppose. In a way, and kind of, yeah, it gives me a bit of power, I think, just to sort of do what I feel's right, yeah. And people are quite impressed. They're impressed because I went into a Labour Party meeting and had to go to our local MP and really told him off, and they go, oh, he looks nervous now, he's shaking. It's like, just knowing that it don't matter, you can just say what you want, you know. Oh, I knew I wasn't going to hurt him. I think it's that thing about pacifism where I've no desire to hurt the man, but I will say what I feel, you know, and that's where it works best, that sort of outspokenness, yeah.
Speak truth to power.
Yeah.